And this is NPR News. I'm Mike Mulcahy. Thanks for tuning in. If you think you've had a busy year, imagine how things have been for Tina Smith. She got a new job in January. She had to move to Washington, find a place to live, and learn a lot of complicated rules. And she won't be able to keep her job unless the voters of Minnesota choose her in November. Tina Smith is, of course, Minnesota's newest United States Senator. DFL Governor Mark Dayton appointed her to the job after Al Franken resigned. And in order to fill out the remainder of Franken's term, she has to win an election later this year. Tina Smith joins me this hour from Washington, and you can get your question in. Just give us a call at 651-227-6000, 651-227-6000. Senator Tina Smith, thanks for coming in.
Well, thank you. It's great to hear your voice. And I have to admit that I still listen to NPR on my iPad every morning when I'm getting ready for work.
Well, you don't have to admit that. You can proudly proclaim that, right?
Exactly. I was feeling a little nostalgic this morning as I was listening to the coverage about Governor Dayton's final State of the State address. It was fun to hear about that.
Well, it was an interesting evening last night at the Capitol. Well, what's the thing that has surprised you most about becoming a U.S. senator or going to the Senate?
The thing that surprises me the most is just the massive amount of activity that there is around Capitol Hill and in our office. It is a lot of work. And, of course, I like to work, so that's fine. I enjoy it a lot. The number of issues that affect Minnesota's lives so directly that I get a chance to work on gives me a great sense of responsibility, and it's also really joyful.
Hmm. So you like that part of the job. What don't you like about it?
Well, I am still adjusting to the back and forth between Washington, D.C. and my home in Minnesota. And that when you get to the point in your workday where you feel like being on an airplane for 2 hours with another 100 or so people is your downtime, you know you have a pretty busy life.
Wow. You had initially decided not to run for governor, but now you will be running for Senate. Are you still thinking you made the right decision?
It's so interesting. I am positive that I made the right decision. It was about a year ago that I decided that running for governor wasn't the right thing for me to do. I made that decision really born out of my sense of what personally I wanted to spend my time on and where I felt a lot of joy in putting my energy. And I knew that that wasn't what I wanted to do. Having said that, I so enjoyed being lieutenant governor, and being able to do that work was just terrific. And then, of course, I never could have anticipated this moment, and it was really an extraordinary moment and a tough one. But as I looked at it, I knew that this was the right thing for me to do.
Hmm. Well, let me turn to some issues. When President Trump put tariffs on steel and aluminum recently, you said it was the right decision. You were glad about it. Why? Tell us more about why you support that decision.
One of the first places, in fact, the first place that I went when I became senator was up to Minnesota's Iron Range. Minnesota produces roughly 3/4 of all of the iron ore that is used in this country. And that part of our economy, the Minnesota's range, has been hard hit by this. Basically, it's cheating that is being done by some countries, dumping steel that is being sold at below cost into America. And that's not the way trade is supposed to work. It's supposed to be fair. So I was glad. I called on the administration to take action against this, and I was glad that they did.
You are a member of the Agriculture Committee. If our trading partners retaliate against these tariffs, won't that be bad news for Minnesota farmers?
Absolutely. And we need to understand that these trading relationships are important and complex. About half of the corn and soybeans that are sold, that are grown in Minnesota, are exported to either Mexico or Canada. Trade is extremely important to our manufacturing sector. In fact, I led a trade mission to Cuba when I was lieutenant governor to help draw attention to the importance of this. But we need to be able to protect ourselves from unfair trade practices while also understanding that the global trade is crucial to our economy. And that's why I was really concerned about some of the president's rhetoric when it came to this subject. Saying that a trade war is a good thing is wrong and irresponsible, and I don't think it's fitting of our president.
Do you agree with the president that NAFTA is terrible and the U.S. should abandon it or renegotiate it?
I believe that it is a good thing always to look at our trade relationships and make sure how they can be improved and how they can continue to be fair. For example, a couple of years ago, we had a situation with sugar in Mexico that needed to be resolved, and that happened. But NAFTA it's important that we have good relationships with, especially with Mexico and Canada, because good trading relationships, because so much of our economy is driven by export markets.
We're talking with Tina Smith this hour. She is a DFL U.S. Senator from Minnesota. You can get your question in for the senator. Give us a call, 651-227-6000, 651-227-6000. Well, as a member of the Agriculture Committee, Senator, what are your priorities for the farm bill?
I really fought hard to be on the Agriculture Committee because of the Farm Bill this year, and also because agriculture is really the foundation in so many ways of Minnesota's economy. When you think about it, almost everything in Minnesota relates one way or another to issues that will be brought up in the Farm Bill. My priorities are going to be first making sure that the base farm programs that Minnesota family farmers and ranchers rely on stay strong. Also, the Farm Bill will be dealing with a lot of economic rural development issues. And, for example, rural broadband is extremely important. And I'll be paying close attention to that and making sure that what Minnesota needs for rural broadband will be included. And then the Farm Bill also, much of the dollars in the Farm Bill goes to nutrition programs. And that is a third crucial component. About 2 weeks or so ago, I organized a Farm Bill working group, and it's been folks from all across the state representing all of the different issues that will be in the Farm Bill, from nutrition to conservation to farm programs to research and economic development. And I've been asking those Minnesotans for advice, and it's been very helpful.
Those nutrition programs, SNAP, we used to call them food stamps, have been fairly controversial, with a lot of the Republicans wanting to cut back on them. Given the size of the tax cut that they passed, is there enough money to keep doing SNAP as it has been?
The idea that we have enough money to give big tax cuts to people who are already doing so well, and then we don't have enough money to make sure that our kids and our grandparents have enough food to live and stay healthy, I just completely reject that. The nutrition program has it helps kids and grandparents and people who are working really hard but still don't have enough money to have a good meal, a healthy meal. It helps them take care of themselves. And it is a program that also allows folks who are, you know, in a bad stretch in their life, kind of move forward. A couple weeks ago, I had a chance to visit with a grandmother who, through a whole series of circumstances, found herself taking care of her grandchildren, something that she hadn't anticipated. One thing goes wrong in this grandma's life, her car breaks down, somebody gets sick, and she doesn't have enough food to feed her grandchildren. And that's what SNAP is for.
You weren't in the Senate yet when the Republican majorities passed the tax overhaul bill. Would you have voted against it if you had been?
I would not have supported this tax bill. And it's very interesting. As I have been traveling around the state, I've been to every single congressional district in Minnesota since I became senator, and a lot of people are looking at this tax bill and talking about it. And what we're talking about is this. You know, if we had $1.5 trillion sitting in a checking account someplace in the federal government, and we said, okay, we've got this money, we should give it out to people and in the form of tax breaks, that would be one thing. But we borrowed all of that money in order to give tax cuts to people who are already doing really well in big corporations. And it's interesting when you're in, especially in rural Minnesota, and they look at this, they go, gosh, you know, my mayor or my township officers would never do anything like that. It's not responsible, and it's not the way we should be running things.
Republicans say it'll help small businesses and create jobs. Do you disagree?
Well, I think that what creates jobs is an excellent business climate. It is having a strong workforce. Minnesota has been demonstrating that when you do all of those things, you do create jobs. I believe we have the highest employment in Minnesota that we've had in the last 17 years. And that was after we made the decision of raising taxes on the richest Minnesotans and then lowering taxes on middle-class Minnesotans. And remember, this tax bill, it makes permanent tax cuts to people who are doing great and big corporations, and the benefits to individuals are short-term. But listen, when people are really struggling, like a lot of people are, you know, every little bit of help, it's good. You need it.
Just on a side note on the tax bill, a lot of people in Minnesota prepaid their property taxes last year. The IRS hasn't said yet whether they'll be able to deduct those on this year's taxes. Will you intervene with the IRS and try to get approval for that?
Well, I think that's such a great example of what happens when you rush through a major complicated piece of legislation without the sort of due process and discussion and due diligence that you need to do. And so, of course, I want to do everything. I'll do everything I can to help make sure that Minnesotans get a fair shake. But I think the lesson learned is that sometimes when you do things like that late at night, in the middle of the night, mistakes get made.
And there's still no answer, though, from the IRS on whether people will be able to take that benefit this time.
Well, maybe we need to make sure that we definitely need to make sure that they get back to people on that. It's a great point.
Tina Smith is my guest this hour. She's a U.S. Senator from Minnesota, a Democrat, and she's standing for re-election in November. You can get your question into the senator. Just give us a call, 651-227-6000. 651-227-6000. And Lucas is on the line from Minneapolis. Lucas, go ahead.
Hi. Hi, Senator Smith. Thank you for taking calls and questions from us. My question for you is, would you support legislation to ban assault weapons similar to those that were responsible for the 17 deaths in Florida? And if so, what would that look like? And how can we keep Minnesotan students safer from gun violence?
Well, Lucas, thank you very much for your question. And I was really touched yesterday by the actions that students all over the country, including in Minnesota, took. And I think students speak with a strong moral authority when you say, listen, adults, it's your job to keep us safe in our schools, and you need to do your job. And I believe that what we need to do is to take common sense steps to keep guns out of the hands of dangerous people. And I have signed on to, certainly we need to do what we can to close these loopholes in the federal background check system, which just create all sorts of ways for felons, convicted felons, or people with serious mental illnesses to end up with guns that aren't safe. And I also would support, and I do support legislation that would keep these military-style assault weapons with high-capacity magazines that are designed to kill a bunch of people all at once to keep those, to ban those. We did that one other time in our country, and the important thing to remember about that, for people who care a lot about gun rights, as I do, that did not destroy the Second Amendment at all.
Another caller on the line for Senator Tina Smith, Dave in Lakeville. Dave, go ahead.
Hello, Tina. Thanks for taking my call. And I'm just wondering if you will oppose the sulfide iron ore mining that's been proposed in the Boundary Waters area by Twin Metals and PolyMet. I'll take my call off the air. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, Dave, and thanks for your question. So I think that it is important to remember that Minnesota has some of the strongest environmental protections of any place in the country. And I believe that our first job is to make sure that we follow those environmental protections. And it's one of the reasons that water quality in northern Minnesota is as good as it is. I have, I believe that, so the PolyMet is working its way through a very long and rigorous environmental review process, as it should. And that would be a project to begin mining for copper and nickel on the old LTV site, which is actually currently a Superfund site in, or close to a Superfund site in northern Minnesota. It is an existing industrial site. And I have said that if that project is able to make its way through that environmental review and follows all of the laws and is able to provide all of the financial assurance that it is that is being required of it by the state, then I would support it at that point. And the Twin Metals Project is a long way away. It's in a different part of the northern Minnesota. And I also think that that project needs to go through a really, really rigorous environmental review process. And that's the most important thing.
DFL Senator Tina Smith is my guest this hour. We're taking your calls now and questions as well for the senator. And let's go right back to the phones and hear from Christy in Minneapolis. Go ahead, Christy.
Hi, Senator. My name is Christy, as you just heard. And I'm wondering, as a non-Native woman who is concerned about our local population, what you can do, what you hope to do to reduce the very persistent violence against Native American women.
Thank you so much for your question, Christy. And it is a really difficult and important challenge that we have to face. Native women face so many challenges that are out of proportion around violence, around challenges also with the opioid crisis that we have. And I have I'm very, very pleased to be serving on the Indian Affairs Committee here in Washington, D.C. It was something I felt very strongly about doing. And what we need to do is to make sure that we appreciate the unique circumstances that Native women find themselves in, and we make sure that the laws and the strategies that we have in place apply to the circumstances that Native women find themselves in, and that we pay special attention to that. And I could also just say that on a whole range of issues, the federal government needs to do a much better job of consulting with our tribal nations, whether it comes to how we implement programs like how we implement child protection programs, how we put together strategies for addressing opioids, how we work with tribal governments on agriculture. Those are all the things that I am already working on and plan to continue to focus on.
You introduced a bill just this week on opioids on reservations. What would that do?
That bill is based on a very successful program in Indian country that is working on diabetes. And what it does is it sets up a new way for tribal governments that are struggling so much to get access to the resources they need to help people struggling with addiction and other diseases of despair, honestly. It helps them to be able to put together programs that are specific to what they need in their community. Everybody knows that treatment works better if it is specific to the culture of the person who is getting the treatment and the place that they live. And my bill will help us to do that. And I'm happy that I'm also working on it with Senator Tom Udall from New Mexico.
Tina Smith is our guest this hour. We have about 15 more minutes with the senator. I'll give out the phone number one more time, 651-227-6000, if you have a question for the senator. 651-227-6000. And let's go to the phones. Mike is on the line from St. Louis Park.
Good morning.
Hello.
Hi, Mike.
Thanks for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
I heard recently about the issue of sales taxes on internet purchases, and there's been a lot of back and forth, the states wanting to be able to collect and businesses complaining that they'd have to file in every state and it would be so complicated. And I was wondering if you were aware that there is an existing infrastructure for dealing with fuel taxes for interstate trucking firms, which could, I would think, be applied in the same way to sales taxes, in that what happens with fuel taxes is that trucking firms file one return in the state in which they reside, in which they provide the data on where they traveled. And then the state dispenses the apportioned taxes out to the other states. So there's one return for the company, and the state, each state already has an infrastructure in place for doing this disbursement.
Okay.
It seems to me that this could be applied to the sales tax situation.
Senator, well, what do you think?
Thanks, Mike, for the question. And first of all, I have to say that when Archie and I were first married, we lived in St. Louis Park, and it's where both of our kids were born. So a shout out to St. Louis Park is in order. On the question that you raise, I strongly believe that we need to have marketplace fairness when it comes to sales taxes. So if I go into a store in St. Louis Park and I buy something, I shouldn't be able to then go and buy something online and not, you know, that company should also have to figure out how to pay the sales tax. And this is something that I supported when I was lieutenant governor and something that I strongly support now. But what you're talking about with this infrastructure for fuels tax for fuel taxes is not something that I'm specifically familiar with. And we will definitely look into that because we do want to make sure that businesses who are selling online and also selling at their storefront, that there's an easy way for them to comply with the rules. And that sounds like an interesting idea.
Senator, let me ask you this. Before he resigned, Al Franken had positioned himself as a leading opponent of President Trump in the Senate. He attracted quite a bit of attention for some of his tough questioning of the president's nominees. What do you see as your role in standing up to the president?
My number one role is keeping an eye on what I can do here in Minnesota to move Minnesota forward. I am focused completely on Minnesota and what I can do to build shared opportunity and deal with the really pressing issues that Minnesotans are grappling with. I also completely disagree with the president on most issues, and I think that I have a strong responsibility here to look for ways of working with people that who want to work in good faith with me to help improve Minnesota's lives, but not be afraid to stand up and speak the truth where I see it. And for today, for example, I was in a hearing with a representative from Pharma, which is the lobbying organization that represents big drug companies. And I knew that the thing I needed to do in that meeting was ask them, how come with this big tax benefit that they've just gotten from the president's tax bill, instead of doing something to lower drug prices, which are hurting Minnesotans, they are plowing all of that money into stock buybacks and big salaries for their executives. That is the kind of tough questions that I am ready and willing to ask here in Washington, D.C.
Well, I think we have Leticia on the line from Minneapolis who has a question along those very same lines. So let's go to the phone. Leticia.
Hi, I'm one of your constituents who depends on daily medication to live a healthy and normal life. I know Mr. Franken was working against big pharmacy to lower prescription costs, and I was just wondering, what are you going to do to continue that fight for your constituents?
Thanks for your question, Leticia, and it is a huge issue. Today, I was telling the story about a woman who came to visit our office yesterday she's 31 years old. She is a single mom, and she has stage 4 lung cancer. And it is her prescription medicine costs are like $16,000 a month before her insurance. That's 15. It's just unconscionable. And we have to fight against that and hold big drug companies accountable. The very first bill that I introduced a couple of weeks ago lowers prescription drug costs by fixing a loophole that the big name brand drug companies use to pay lower cost generic drugs to stay off of the market. I think that's just wrong. Big drug companies have all the money they need. What we need to do is lower healthcare costs for everybody else. And I will continue to look for opportunities to do that.
Let's take a call from Pete in Maple Grove.
Hello.
Hi, Pete. Go ahead.
Hi. I'm a small business owner, and I'm in the position where I have to provide my own health care insurance. So I have to go onto the individual market to purchase my insurance. This does not allow me to take any advantage of a group purchasing power. consequently, my premiums for my family of three are $1,400 a month, and that's with a $7,000 deductible. The Affordable Care Act prohibits small business owners from joining together and developing some sort of a group to buy group insurance. So I'm in that 5% of the population that's been forced into the individual market, and now we have extraordinarily high premiums, deductibles, and I know this is all going to be changing. I know that the ACA has been eviscerated with President Trump. Just what's your vision? How is this going to all end up? What are you hearing in Washington?
Pete, thank you so much for that question. And the concern that you raise, the challenge that you raise, is the number one economic issue that I hear from families all over Minnesota, whether you are a small business person like you are, whether you're a farmer trying to figure out how to pay for your health insurance. It is the biggest issue. And you're right that the Affordable Care Act has been eviscerated, and many of the strategies that were in the Affordable Care Act that would go to, as you say, creating a large pool so that costs can go down have been eviscerated. And it is an urgent issue that we need to solve. Here in Washington, D.C., there have been proposals that Senator Patty Murray from Washington and Senator Lamar Alexander from Tennessee have been working on. They were making headway on a proposal that is similar to what we have done in Minnesota to provide to make it possible for states to set up reinsurance programs which help to lower premiums. And I have been hopeful, and I've been working with both Senator Murray and Senator Alexander to get that move forward. Now it's gotten caught up in some of the Washington back and forth around other things that, that don't make any sense getting attached to it in order to get it through. And I hope that that will just stop, because we could help right away lowering health insurance premiums if we could get that bill move forward in the next chunk of, next several weeks.
Let's take another caller, Erica from Two Harbors. Erica, go ahead. Well, I'm afraid we may have lost Erica.
Made me think about Two Harbors, though, so that's good.
I think her question was about climate change, and she was wondering what can be done, what might the Senate do, if anything, about climate change?
I believe that climate change is a pressing issue. It's a pressing environmental issue, and it's a pressing economic issue. And it is also an issue that local communities have to figure out what to do about because of what's happening with increased flooding and storms, super storms. It's something that we shouldn't ignore. So it's shocking to me that the Trump administration has systematically removed the science and references to climate change on the federal government websites, and is acting as if it isn't going to happen. And that's like burying our heads in the sand. What I think we need to do is push first to look for ways of moving towards more clean, green, and reliable and affordable energy. As the lieutenant governor, I worked hard on expanding, raising Minnesota's renewable energy standard, and also pushing a lot for energy efficiency. Every penny that you don't spend on energy is carbon that doesn't get released into the air and is a penny that you have. So we need to do more of that. For Minnesota, what this can mean is real economic opportunity. We've got, I think, around 60,000 clean energy jobs in Minnesota. Those are great jobs for people. A lot of them are in greater Minnesota as well as in the metro area. So it's also good for our economic competitiveness to be a leader on clean energy.
We just have a few minutes left with Senator Tina Smith. I want to turn just briefly to the campaign. One of the Republicans running against you, State Senator Karen Housley, said that you basically went to Washington and left Minnesotans to deal with the problems of getting their license tabs renewed. Should you be accountable for some of the failures of the Dayton administration?
Well, Listen, I understand people's frustration with Minlars and the getting their license tabs and all of that. I really, and it's really frustrating when that happens. And I'm also glad to see that the Dayton administration is moving forward and coming up with some solutions to try to improve this.
Will it be an issue in the campaign? Should it be an issue? Are you, as a former member of the Dayton administration, former chief of staff, are you responsible for some of these issues?
I didn't personally work on the Minlars effort, but I think that when I think about the work that Governor Dayton did, that I did with him when I was his chief of staff and then his lieutenant governor, I'm really proud of that record of job growth, of making our tax system more fair, of investing in education, especially all-day preschool and, all-day kindergarten and preschool. And I'm proud of the work that that he's done and that I have done with him.
And as the campaign gets going here, how will you brand yourself for your election? What will be your key issues and how will you present yourself to the public?
Well, I have been completely focused on learning how to be a good senator and tackling all of the issues that are happening here in Washington, D.C., and the question of how I'll be focusing my campaign in the fall, it feels a little bit far away, but what I would hope is that Minnesotans would look at me and say, boy, she seems like she is all about the work, she fights really hard for us, and she understands that we need in Minnesota an economy that works for everyone, where there's opportunity that is shared by everyone, and that's what I'm working on.
It's a major undertaking to run for statewide office. Do you think you'll have the resources you need? Will you be able to raise enough money and do all the things you need to do to win?
Well, I would say that I should not be underestimated. I am ready to tackle that task, and things are going well. And as my mother would say, the proof will be in the pudding.
Another shakeup this week in Washington on the president's cabinet. Rex Tillerson was fired. He was the Secretary of State. Mike Pompeo apparently will be the president's nominee. Have you given that any thought? Would you vote to confirm him?
Well, to imagine that we live in a world where the United States Secretary of State is being fired on Twitter, I think, is just crazy. The president ought to put his phone down and just stop with that nonsense. And now we have an opening, and I think the Senate confirmation process needs to proceed apace, and there will be there'll be a confirmation process, and I will look forward to seeing the information that comes out of that confirmation process as I make my decision.
And what about Gina Haspel, the president's choice for CIA director? She played a big role in what they called enhanced interrogations, which many people called torture. Have you had a chance to think about whether you will vote to confirm her?
Well, in that case, I will also try to keep an open mind and to wait to see what comes out of the nomination process. I think the confirmation process, I think that is important. But I mean, I have to say I'm gravely concerned about the things that I know so far.
Senator Tina Smith, thanks so much for coming on today.
Well, thanks, Mike. It's really wonderful to be able to talk with you and your listeners, and let's do it again soon.
Let's do that. I hope you'll come back.
Thank you.